Radio.com. Do you ever feel like you're in mentality hell? You have your doctors and or your support systems in place, but you are still in pain. And then, who is your biggest abuser? Could it now be the one staring back at you in the mirror? To be or not to be accountable is really the question when making the journey to get past the pain of misuse. TobeAccountable.com, practical accountability coaching, specializing in mentality rehabilitation and restoration. A proud sponsor of Soul Sista Enterprise.
Grace Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trace Rios, our only limit is your imagination. Trace Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at TraceRioSilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, She's Gone Country with Becky Christensen Phillips.
She's been playing at a room on the strip for 10 years in Vegas. Every night she looks in the mirror and she only ages. Everybody's buying. Says I'm a simple girl myself, grew up on Long Island. So she packs her bags to try her hand. Says this might be my last chance. She's gone country, look at them boots. She's gone country, back to her roots.
Good evening and welcome to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen Phillips, and I just want to welcome you to the show this evening. I am sure that it is going to be an exquisite hour tonight because we are welcoming a fabulous guest to the show tonight. First, I would just like to take a quick moment and thank our sponsors, our station sponsor, TobeAccountable.com and Ambassador Pageant. I also like to thank our show sponsors, Trace Rio Silver, Trinity Wellness, Western Wishes is our charity team. Thank you for allowing us to be a part of that. There's so many people that are doing so many things to help out this show and the station continue to grow, and we appreciate you, Higher Scent. We know you've come along and partnered with us, so thank you from the bottom of our hearts so that we're able to bring this show to the air each and every week. For those of you who are listening right now, be sure to know that if you want to join the conversation at any time, You just need to push 1 if you're listening via the phone and have called into the 347-857-3760 number. You just have to push 1 and you'll go into the host queue. My producer, Maria, will be there and she will let me know you're on the air or in the queue if you want to come on the air and speak with our guest tonight. You can also listen to us via Blog Talk Radio, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/4FORE radio. And, of course, you can always listen to us on the archives there and on our personal website, shesgonecountry.us. So, shoo, I think I got that all out of the way. Right now, I want to welcome to the show first is my aunt, my dear, dear aunt and co-host, Vicki Christensen. Are you there?
I am, Vicki. Good evening, everyone. It's going to be a great show, so really looking forward to it.
Well, I'm glad that you can make it tonight. I know you've been running around. I think you just got back from the Houston rodeo. Is that right?
I did, Vicki. It was a great trip, and all I can say is the Houston committee really did it up great.
Oh, I'm glad that you're back. And also with us tonight is our beautiful and my other lovely aunt that I've come to know and love is my guest co-host, Donalyn Quintana. Donalyn, are you there?
I am. This is going to be a great interview tonight. This is kind of like a rodeo family night.
Well, you know, we've been having a lot of those lately, and I think that's just kind of the way the Lord's got the show going and what he's got in store for us. And so I want to get moving forward. And so before we introduce our guests, I just wanted to tell you that She's Gone Country with Vicki is all about empowering and elevating everyday cowboys and cowgirls who love God, who love country, who love the Western way of life. And we are bringing them here to inspire and educate those that maybe don't know the Western heritage or they do, and there's just been, we just kind of bridge the gap of yesterday's generation, today's generation, and the future generation so that we can keep the heart of the American cowboy and the cowboy culture alive. So tonight, it is with great honor and with great respect and with great privilege to welcome to the show. Not only is he an entrepreneur, he's a cattleman, he's an Irishman, he's a world champion, and he is also a 5-time inductee into several Hall of Fames. I'm bringing to the show Jack Roddy. Are you there, Jack?
Vicki, yes, I am. Thank you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you, and I know that you know, you have a rich heritage that goes back, you know, many, many decades in this industry and this culture that we love so much. And I appreciate that you're able to come on the show tonight. And just so you know, Blog Talk is a worldwide platform, so a lot of our listeners come in through the archives after the show has aired, and they come in from everywhere. I mean, they can come in from Greece, they can come in from Ireland, they can come in from the U.S. and listen to the show at any time. So we'll have people that come on the show that do know who you are, but we also will have people come and tune into the show that don't know who you are. So I just would ask if you could, please, could you give our audience maybe just like a 2-minute overview of who Jack Roddy is?
You want me to do that?
Yes, please.
In 2 minutes?
Well, you know, whatever it takes.
Well, it might be a little hard. Anyway, I'm a rancher right now. I live in Brentwood, California, an hour east of San Francisco. I've got a cattle ranch. I run cattle for the state of Hawaii. We've also got a golf course on the ranch, a world-class golf course called Roddy Ranch Golf Club. My rodeo career goes back I was a professional 64 years ago. Today I'm 77 years old, and I still rope and still compete. But I love the sport of rodeo. I've been in a variety of businesses. I've had shopping centers, and I've been in the bar business and the rodeo business as a contractor. But my love of the West, and we'll go into that later, came from my father, who was born in Ireland in a house with a dirt floor. And after that, you can interview me, and I'll tell you that whole story. But I love the West. I love the cowboy. And I've been lucky in life to have enjoyed a life that I never dreamed that I could achieve. And anyway, that's basically what I can tell you right now without you interviewing me, but I'll let you have at me.
Well, this is Vicki, and I sure appreciate you. That's good. That's quick 2 minutes there. You broke it right down. Well, your beautiful wife, Donna, sent me a bio, a little bit about your accomplishments, and my mom, Kathy, who is, of course, Marty Smith's sister, who is married to your dear friend, my uncle, Dale Smith, and I know you guys go way back, and
she shared a little bit with me. I remember when I first met you, it was years and years and years ago, and I remember we all went to dinner and I got to meet you. Very, very brief in person, but boy, your name was always in conversation. So I feel like I've, you know, been around you more than just that one time. So, but she had told me about your show that was coming on RFK-TV, and I also had spoken with you last month, and you told me about it. So I got to watch that. And so I feel like I've kind of had a few in-depth personal conversations with you just by watching those few things and reading your bio. But I know our guest co-host, Donna Lynn, has a very extensive history with you. And as we were talking previously, you know, you said you go back with our family quite a bit. So tell me a little bit about...
I'd like to say something. I go back with both families. I go back with the Christensen family when I was a kid. I used to rodeo around Christensen brothers, so I knew Bobby mm-hmm. and Hank. I knew the whole Christensen family. And also Jim Madelin, Donna Lynn's uncles, really kind of started me rodeoing. So I go way back with the Christensens, with Kathy, with everybody. So I knew you guys when you were kids. But anyway, go ahead.
Jack, this is Vicki. And again, you know, I grew up around you, and you know, it's just you're so inspirational and just someone to look up to and admire. And you've done so much for the sport of rodeo, for the rancher, for the Western way of life, for all of your life. So, again, we're just so pleased to have you. But I have a particular question that I did a little background researching in, and I think some people are going to be surprised to know just exactly what event you won your first rodeo in. But I know your first rodeo you won at 16 years of age. And can you share with our audience in what event that was?
No, Vicki, I was 14 years old. At Gilroy, California, I won the wild horse race.
I love it.
And I won $90, and then I thought I was rich. And I thought, I'm going to rodeo the rest of my life and retire. So my career started with $90 at 14 at Gilroy, California.
Love it. Well, so I would take it, though, and I guess that would be my next question for you is, you know, the Welsh horse race, that's a pretty crazy event. You know, you have to get that horse out of the chute and you have to calm it. So, you know, I know a lot of the you know, what do you call it, the method of use behind that is covering their eyes so they can't see what's going on, which is almost like you're getting ready to you know, wrestle them to the ground almost because you gotta you know, get them in that stance so you can get to their head. So is that where it became a natural fit then to move into steer wrestling, or did you do something else before that?
Gilroy, I was too young to enter the rodeo. They had a wild horse race out on a racetrack. I had two guys with me. One did the mugging, which grabbed the horse around the blinded his eye or held your hand over his eyes so he couldn't see it, and held him. There was an anchor, held a halter, and I was a rider. They bought eight horses out on the track. There's a big pinto horse. I saddled him up, and then I had to race him a mile around a track. The first one to the finish line. It was a winner, and I won $90. I thought I'd never seen another poor day.
I love it.
That was smart.
So from there, it says that, you know, your bio shares with us that you went to Lick High School in San Jose, and then you went on to Cal Poly University, where you got your degree. So you rodeoed in college. And so is that really where your passion stemmed from at that point? Or tell us a little about that.
When I was a kid, my father bought a rodeo grounds in Colma in South San Francisco. Harry Rowell used to furnish the stock, and I was 2 years old, and I loved rodeo all my life. My father bought a ranch in San Jose, and when I was a kid, I started riding calves, and I started bulldogging Bramer cows off a unbroke horse because I wanted to learn to be a cowboy in college. I was a professional when I was age 15. I had an RCA card when I was 15 years old, and I used to work every event. I rode bareback, saddle broncs, and when I went to college, I worked every event in college. And steer wrestling, I really wanted to be a bronc rider, and I rode bulls. But with my size and everything, steer wrestling got to be the thing that I got proficient at because I was tall and had the leverage, and as time went on, I left I quit the other events and aimed primarily to the steer wrestling and also the team roping.
Well, Jack, this is Vicki, and that leads us up to your very first NFR in 1962, and that you qualified then for the steer wrestling, correct?
That's correct. 1962, in fact, I believe I made it that year. I stayed with Donna Lynn's mother in Portland. I won, I think, the steer wrestling at Portland and qualified me to go to the NFR at Los Angeles in 1962.
Hey, Jack, wow. This is Donna Lynn. Was that the same year that Freckles broke his neck?
Freckles broke his neck on a bull called Black Smoke at Portland. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't compete, but he was a world champion. That was 1962. That was my first NFR.
You know, that's interesting. Do you remember the first NFR happened to be kind of strange crowds because the President Kennedy was assassinated? Remember
that's
that?
Correct. The national mm-hmm. final started in Dallas in 59, moved to Los Angeles, but Los Angeles, it was a complete flop. President Kennedy got killed, there was no
yep.
crowds, and then it moved to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I remember that, because the PRCA paid for all of our ways to go down, because Freckles was in the hospital that whole time until the NFR in Portland.
That's right.
Do you remember that, Vicki? You
I
were
was right
little
there when he, got, when he broke his neck.
You know, I do, Donnelly, and I do remember that. Wow, that's going back a lot of years.
I know it.
Well, aren't we blessed, Becky? This is Becky, and we are going to have so much to talk about. And we're at the first NFR right now, and there's a lot of history between the first NFR and the NFR today. But I'm gonna just interrupt for just a minute. We're going to go to a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I know we have a number of callers on the line as well. So please remember, if you want to visit with us and you want to visit with Jack, just dial 1 and come into the host queue so we know that you're there. And we're more than happy to bring you on so you can join in the conversation. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Jack Roddy.
4Radio.com.
Since 1997, Tresrio Silver has been providing custom handmade trophy buckles at an affordable price. Family owned, your business is important to us. We are big enough to meet your needs, but small enough to provide that personal touch. Give us a call today at 800-550-7535 and speak with someone on our design staff. Or go online to www.tresriosilver.com. Let us help you design your next trophy buckle. That's Tresrio Silver, Llano, Texas.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016. She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
4Radio.com.
And welcome back to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen-Phillips, and we are spending the hour this evening with the wonderful and most generous man to come on and spend the hour with us ladies. We're visiting with Jack Roddy, and he is just a pleasure to have on. For those of you who maybe are not familiar with Jack Roddy, he is a cowboy in his own right. He has been cattle ranching and rodeoing since, gosh, he was 15 years old is what he shared with us at the last commercial break, before the last commercial break. And so, Jack, I appreciate you coming on, and that alone just really just throws me that you entered the RCA, which today obviously is the PRCA, at 15 years old. So that tells me you have seen so much over the last course of the last, 10 years or so, and, well, 10 years, a couple decades, let's just be real. You have knowledge,
And I know that now I think you have to be at least 18 to join the PRCA. Have you seen just an extensive amount of change over the years in the Rodeo Association, or you know, has it stayed pretty consistent? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, Becky, how I got involved in the RCA, in my era, I went to high school, and if you got a letter from your principal, you had good grades, you could compete at RCA Rodeo. So I started when I was 15 on a high school letter. It doesn't exist today, but that's how I started. And the only rodeos I went to was RCA Rodeos. I never did want to go amateur. I wanted to be with the best. So I started out at 15. Then I got my RCA card. Denver, Bill Linderman stopped me as you're going to join. So I joined when I was 18 years old. But prior to that, I went with a high school card. But I've seen so many changes from my era to today. I go to Salinas Rodeo, and we used to go there in a pickup and a camper and two-horse trailer. And today these young guys are driving battleships, which I've got one today too, a 40-foot-long trailer with live-in compartments on and on. Takes a football field worth to park these things, but they got huge outfits, and a lot of things have changed. The cattle have changed. I remember the national finals in Oklahoma City. The steers used to weigh 650, 700 pounds, and fresh steers never were touched, and the arena was big. And we're today, and I understand because Vegas is a small arena, they're using lighter steers that have all been thrown down, so there's real difference in cattle. I remember Salinas Rodeo one time in 1960. I think it was our first televised rodeo. I made the finals after three go-arounds. Going to the fourth performance, I was 76 seconds on three steers, averaging 27, 28 seconds. Today, they're throwing them in 5, 6, 7 seconds. So the conditions have changed from my era. The other thing I feel, I really admire the young cowboy today. They're tremendous athletes. But what's happened in my era, nobody taught me how to do anything. I just had to get on bulls and get on horses and bulldogs. There's no schools in my era. And I just had to learn myself. Today, these kids I watch them. They go to a junior rodeo. They learn. They go to high school. They got rodeos to go to. They go to colleges. And the time they're 18, 20 years old, they're seasoned veterans. I wasn't a veteran until I was 26, 27 years old. Case in point at Texas Stadium, I think the boy's name was Richard Champion, I believe was his name. Won $1 million. He was 20 years old competing against the best. So I've seen a lot of changes. I remember the phones. We used to stop down the highway and have to pick up a phone to enter. Today they enter with Procom. So I've seen a lot of changes. But the one thing that hasn't changed, and I think the stock. I remember every rodeo contractor had 5 or 6 or 7 really ranked bulls. Today there's herds of them. I think the breeding programs with the Sankeys, the Rossers, the Kesslers, on and on. These bucking horses today are bigger and stouter with the breeding programs have got so good. So the stock is tremendous. So anyway, I can go on and on about changes, but it's really changed. I remember L.A. had no people at the finals. Vegas, you can't get a ticket to it. So, and last thing I'll say, when it came to money, in 1966, I won the national finals at Oklahoma City of the steer wrestling, and I won $1,700. And I was so happy. Today, I looked at what our current guy this year won, and then today I'd have won $150,000. So it's drastically changed.
Oh, wow. Jack, this is Becky, and I have a question that I want to go back to about the prize money. But first, I want to just real quick before we get into all that, My beautiful mom, Miss Kathy Christensen, I know she is working, but she wanted to call in tonight to make sure she said hi because she thinks the world of you. So I just want to bring her on real quick so she has a little bit of time to say hello. Mom, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Kathy.
I sure can.
Good hearing your voice.
Oh, thanks, Jack. I'm so glad you're on. I just wanted to say to you that I forgot to mention it the last time I spoke with you on the phone. I wanted to send you my condolences for the loss of Nancy. and also for your good friend, John W. Jones. I know that, you know, it was rough months there for you.
Yeah,
and
a,
we just,
you
know, I just wanted
deal,
to...
It was a tough deal, but they're in better places today, Cass, so they're in a better place.
Yeah. But I just wanted to let you know that we were thinking of you, and
well,
if you forgot, I apologize.
I appreciate it,
Cass. It's so good to have you on.
Well, I'm proud to be asked. Again, I go back, this is family to me, because I know everybody for when you guys were all kids, so it's nice to be still thought of, so I'm just glad to be here.
This is Donna Lynn. I just want to say hi to Kathy. Hi, Kathy.
Donna Lynn, hello. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm good. This is really a fun night tonight. I'm really enjoying it. So anyway, you take care.
You too. I won't interrupt. I'll let you carry on with Jack.
Take care, Kathy, so much.
Calling you.
Mom, I love you, and thank you so much for connecting me with Jack. My mom, of course, is my biggest fan, and she's my biggest promoter. And so she's been working the backgrounds for us and really helping me make some really great connections with some potential and future guests, Jack, and some others that we have coming up in future broadcasts. So, Mom, thank you so much. I love you very, very much.
Well, Jack, this is Vicki, and I want you to bring us up to, you know, your first NFR qualification was in 1962, but you came back in 1966 and 1968 and won the world title in steer wrestling. I know there's a lot of our viewers that, you know, we've been promoting you, you know, through Facebook and saying, you know, 2 times world champion, but those were steer wrestling world championships, correct, Jack?
Well, I held... Actually, 6 world championships. I was intercollegiate all-around champion in college in Cal Poly in 1959.
Wow.
And I was also world champion collegiate bulldogging champion at Cal Poly University in 59. Then I was professional world champion in 62. Then I mean 66. Then I did rodeo the following year, and then I rodeoed again in 68 and won it again, and then I retired. And I didn't. I just team roped, and I didn't go many places. And then I heard about the seniors tour, like the Masters Golf Tour, and I weighed about 230 pounds and was out of shape, and I decided I'm going to go win 2 more world championships. So I spent 6 months, got down to 210 pounds, and I won the seniors world championship in 91 and 92. So I held.
Way to go. That says it all. I mean, you know, boom, 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 boom. 2 PRCA, RCA World Championships and right down the line. There's not very many people that can accomplish that, Jack.
Well, I love the sport and I just enjoy my friends and I'm just lucky in life that I was able to rodeo without getting hurt bad and do what I did. And to this day, I still love the sport.
Hey, Jack, this is Donna Lynn, and I was wondering, am I correct that you were vice president of the PRCA?
Donna Lynn, I was 16 years a director of the RCA. I think I started as steer wrestling director, I believe, in 1962, and I served as steer wrestling director for I don't know how many years, and then Dale Smith was the president, and
mm-hmm.
he wanted me to be his vice president, so I was
mm-hmm.
vice president of the RCA. So totally I served 16 years as a bulldogging director, vice president of the RCA.
You have done so much for rodeo. You're truly, you know, one of our great legendary notables for the sport of rodeo. But what could you talk about your relationship with Malcolm Baldridge?
Malcolm Baldridge was one of my... dearest friends. Malcolm Baldridge, to just elaborate a little bit, we had a humane problem with the state of Ohio, and which would have triggered and stopped rodeo. Senator Clem McSpadden was a senator from Oklahoma. He was a president then of the RCA. Dale had quit for a year or two, and he got a phone call from this fellow named Baldridge in Connecticut, and he said, meet me at Will Rogers Airport. And Clem went out there, and his jet sitting there, and took him right to Connecticut, and Malcolm Baldridge went to pick the phone up and stop those bills. He apparently went to school with the Kennedys, and I go on and on with Malcolm Baldridge, the stories about him. But as time went on, we got to be the best of friends. We team roped together. I got a picture in my trophy room. In 1972, we set an arena record at Denver at the stock show. We roped one in 7.5. That was the first year we had team roping at Denver. And on three steers, we placed on two. And I still got in the Rodeo Sports News. It was the first rodeo of the year. We were leading for the world championship. In fact, we won $1,300. But Mack went on. He was the head of Scoville Manufacturing. Reagan appointed him as his commerce secretary, and, in fact, he got killed here at this ranch. 1987, his team rope and the horse flipped over and killed him. I went to Washington, D.C. I flew in Air Force One. Reagan, I won't get into all this stuff, but anyway, we flew to Washington, and at the Washington Cathedral, President Reagan got up and said, quote, "When I had Mack on tap for my commerce secretary, I called his wife, Midge. She's Mr. Reagan, he can't come to the phone, he's out roping." And President Reagan said, "I knew I had the right man." And the second thing he said, there was only two people could ever get directly through to his office, was me or any of his cowboy friends. And I used to call up there and visit with him. He loved rodeo. He was a team roper, came from a ranching family in Nebraska. And his sister wrote the book on etiquette, Letitia Baldrige. She served under five presidents the United States. And I go on and on with these stories, but you know,
oh,
time.
Wonderful. They're wonderful stories. So were you instrumental, Jack, in putting together that Washington D.C. rodeo at the White House?
He put that on. President Reagan was there. I was invited. At that time, I broke some ribs, so I didn't go. But Mack's the one that put that rodeo on in Washington. I didn't compete, though.
Mm-hmm. You know, the reason why I remembered that was the last time I saw Bob Edson, when he was very, very ill last June, up on his wall was these great pictures of him, President Reagan.
President Reagan and Malcolm Baldrige.
Yes, So anyway, you have truly, I mean, you truly have done so much for the sport of rodeo. We're just, it's really an honor to, you know, we actually get to say, yeah, we know Jack.
Listen, you guys are blowing my ego plumb out of sight. But I always feel that the sport of rodeo has been good to me, and I've always wanted to put back in whatever I was lucky enough to do. I've always felt proud of putting back in. If I can help kids and stuff, I just enjoy it. It's not, I just feel people need to, if they got something out of something, they ought to put it back, not just take and not give. So that's just my theory.
Well, Jack, this is Becky, and, you know, it's such an education to listen to you talk and the history that you have. And I'm really excited to when we come back from commercial break, because I have some questions about that, because, as you know, that's what our show is about. It's about bridging the generations. And I know that there was something that caught my attention when I was watching your show on RFD TV that, when we come back from break, I want to ask you. It's about the cowboy hat. So
okay.
We are going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with Jack Roddy.
ForRadio.com. Trust Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family-designed experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Trust Rio's, our only limit is your imagination. That's Trust Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535 or find us on the web, TrustRioSilver.com. Proud to be part of She's Gone Country with Becky. She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Radio.com.
The ball was broke.
Welcome back to She's Gone Country with Becky. This is your host, Becky Christensen Phillips, and I'm here tonight joined with my co-hosts, Vicki Christensen and Donald and Quintana. And we have been spending the first half hour of the show just getting to know and welcoming on our guest and our friend, Jack Roddy. Jack, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Oh, well, welcome back, and thank you again, as I've stated previously, for coming on tonight. As I told you, it's been a pleasure listening and listening to, you know, Vicki and Donalyn and you visit, because you guys have such a root. And I, you know, I'm not going to say I'm a young buck because I'm not all that young, but, you know, I am the second generation here on the phone. So I'm just going to say thank you, because it's an education. And
well, Vicki, when I talk about the sport, a lot of the sport rubbed off on me through a lot of your generations. I remember Hank and Bobby Christensen had a big influence on my life, because I was a rodeo contractor too, and I learned a lot from Hank and Bobby. When it comes to Jim Madlin, a lot of the families, John Quintana, I go back with all you guys. You're
I know. I know.
So it's you know, we all got a hell of a history. A lot of stuff that I got came from your family. So that's kind of the way I feel.
Well, and you know, Jack, the thing that I like, and I think it's why I'm so drawn to this generation, is because of the deep-rooted heart and the deep-rooted passion behind who you are and who my grandparents were, my family, everything, Aunt Vicki, Donalyn. There's a richness that's behind all of you and your passion, and it's the same one that I have for the sport of rodeo, for the Western way of life, and a protection that we have over, and there's so much meaning behind it that we want to protect it as if it's our own, because we don't
very
want
much
it to disappear. And I really think, you know, when this was laid on my heart, it was just really important, because we are moving at such a fast pace in this generation, and we are forgetting to slow down. And you're fortunate enough where, you know, you still have your cattle ranches. You still can just get up on the back of a horse and take a ride out into the, you know, countryside and just be one with everything in the surroundings around you that make the American cowboy way of life. And I think, you know, what I wanted to ask you when we came back from break is, you said something when you went back to Ireland, to your homeland, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about those two series, if you could first, and then share with us, you said something, and I'm not going to quote it exactly correct, so I'll leave it to you to explain and divulge more information, but the pride that you have in wearing a cowboy hat. You said something specifically to that, and it just caught my attention, and I was just like, wow, I wish every cowboy still today felt that way. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, I will say that, and they showed it on that telecast, Cowboys in Ireland, and I told Chris Cox that about 10 years ago, District 4 had a high school wanted me to help the kids steer wrestle. So I had 24 kids come out to my ranch, and it shows on the telecast, my arena here, and their parents were here, and I brought them out in the arena, and I'll never forget what I said to them. I said, if you came out here to have me teach you how to get rich rodeo and do yourself a favor and get in your car and go home. I set a world record when I won one time, and the second time I come within a few hundred dollars of a record. But when I got done, I did not have a lot of money. I had a wore out car, but I had a lot of memories of that. But everything I got to this day, I can attribute to rodeo, but not what I won in the arena. It was the people I met. It's the doors that had opened. I built a shopping center in San Jose. Nobody get anything approved, but I produced the Firefighters Rodeo. They all knew me, all the political people in San Jose, California, and I got it zoned. I built a nice shopping center. I was in the bar business, and people came in to see the world champion. It helped me. I belong to the biggest trail ride in the world, Rancheros Vistadores. I've been a member for 44 years. Regan was a member of that, President Regan, and I met so many people that opened so many doors, because I always was proud of my cowboy hat and dress like a cowboy and act like a cowboy. So when I told all these kids, I said, whatever you do, you don't have to be a world champion, but people in that grandstand will be watching you, and down the road, when your career is over, The way you handle yourself is important. So always be proud of your cowboy hat, be proud of who you are, and handle it correctly. They don't like somebody cussing and on. They want somebody to act like a cowboy. So I just got believe in cowboy pride, and I, to this day I do. I go back to one of our great champions. His dad was my dearest friend, John W. Jones Sr. He sent a son to me one time to see if I could help him. I spent a week watching Mike. Johnny, I can't help you much, but you will be the world champion. But all I can tell you, always be proud of who you are. And down the road, people in that grandstand will see you. Well, Johnny went and did a lot of ads for Wrangler, one of our most revered champions, Johnny Jones Jr. So I go back, and kids come out here, and I try to help them. But I said, just be proud of who you are and act proud of it. They always remember a king. They never remember a bum. So that's kind of what I told them.
Wow, Jack, this is Vicki. And, you know, just sharing this, you know, with all of our listeners, sharing it with Donalyn and Becky and I tonight is so special because you truly speak from a cowboy's heart. And there just aren't a lot of true cowboys left around. Thank you again. I mean, you're just so inspirational. And I know you have so many other stories to share with us. Donalyn, you have something else to visit with Jack about.
Can I say one more thing? Before I get them, I've got a cattle ranch here, and a lot of kids come out all over the country here, and I tell them one thing. I said that with all the technology today we've got, there's something they'll never replace. It's the horse, the cowboy, and the rope. Because we got a ranch, when animals get sick, computers can't find out. And it takes the rope and the cowboy to take care of animals, and I really believe that. So anyway, go ahead.
Well, amen. That's wonderful.
Well, this is Donalyn, and I just wanted to thank you. I know you came for a lot of the Cowboys, but when I saw you at the Hall of Fame when Johnny was inducted, it was so good to see you, and I can't get over how good you you must have some secret. I don't know what it is, but you do not look 77. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. But you know what? Today is the year anniversary that Johnny got killed. And so I think this is very ironic that I have wonderful family people that are, you know, you just on those one-year anniversaries, you have a little bit of a sadness in your heart, but it's so neat to be with
Donalyn, your uncle is my dearest friend. I couldn't have did what I did without your uncle, Jim Madlin. And Johnny Quintana rodeoed with John Jones and I on the plane when he was just a kid. So I go way back with Johnny.
You know what? Becky and Vicki are going to laugh at this because every time on the show I say, has anybody approached you to write a book?
It's being written right now, Donalyn. There's a lady writing a book about my life, and I don't know when it'll be out sometime this fall.
Oh, we can't wait. Oh,
it'll be
wonderful.
And
ironically,
I hope she doesn't print, though.
right. Ironically, I'm probably wasting much time. But did you know that your niece, Heather, is now our managing editor to get our 20th anniversary book completed for the NFR for the 20th anniversary of Western Wishes.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. So anyway, boy, this is a family affair.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Well, when that book comes out, be sure to let us know because we'll link it up to our website and put it up there with the CB Cowboys so people can hit our website, which let's just plug that real quick, shesgonecountry.us. That's shesgonecountry.us. Just thought I'd throw that out there. But you can go to you can go to that link, and then, yeah, we can throw that up there, and we'll have another book edition to add to it. And for me, it's great, and it's special because, again, Jack, I can't explain to you how much I have this passion and this desire to – I didn't really realize it. I really thought at first that this show was going to be about – bridging the gap between those that don't know about country and those that do, but I'm really, really finding that it's bridging the gap in the generations within the American cowboy culture itself, today's cowboy versus yesterday's cowboy, because I'm finding that there's a story behind it. Like Donalyn said, everybody has a book, but I'm really, truly finding that there's a message that your generation and Aunt Vicki's generation and my generation want to get out to the cowboys of today. So I would just ask, if you were standing amongst all those, well, any of them really, any of the cowboys of today, would you tell them that same message that you gave those kids on your ranch?
Would I do what now?
Would you give them the same speech the cowboys that are out in the PRC, would you give them that same speech that you give those boys that came to your ranch?
Same thing. I've had a lot of the cowboys come to the ranch here in the spring. We got a golf tournament, and a lot of them like to golf and rope, and they go through my trophy room, and I tell them the same thing. I said, be proud of who you are, because that in the grandstands are going to be people watching you, and down the road, it'll open doors as long. People love cowboys. Every kid wants to be a fireman, wants to be a policeman or a cowboy. And just be proud of who you are. Dress nice. Be proud of what you are.
Well, and, you know, Jack, I have another question. This is just kind of a side note, because as I'm thinking about you and your history and your lineage of all the events that you've done, but really persevering and doing well in the steer wrestling and the team roping, what did you think about Oak Berry's run at the American? Was that not awesome?
I was there at the American. I was on the 50-yard line. I was a guest of the RFD channel. I sat there with Ed Stiegel and Baxter Black, and I watched it. And Luke Brancina was sitting next to me. And I talked to Justin McKee, who I highly admire as an announcer. I talked to him the night before with Billy Minnick. And I talked to Justin. I said, Justin, my pick would be, of all of them, would be Oak Berry, because Oak Berry was a four-time world champion. And I remember one time, I was 54 years old in the seniors tour at Dixon on a fresh steer. I threw in 3-3, and I was 54. Oat was 50. I threw one at the national finals that year in 4 with a crippled foot. But in those days, I really worked out. I lost 25 pounds, and I really worked at it. And I knew all those years that once I was in shape, I could be competitive. Oat Berry, I saw a picture of him. I think he was 40 or 50 pounds heavier than. And once they selected him, he lost a lot of weight. And Oak Berry, almost, I think if that steer would have given him a little bit, he could have won it. So just because they're old don't mean they can't beat him if they're in shape.
Oh, man, though. I was watching it here in my living room on my couch as it's pouring out snow outside. And I felt like I was sitting there. But I can only imagine how loud it was in there, because he got a standing ovation.
Here's a man 50 years old. Up against all the young guys, and if that steer would have given him a little bit, he could have won it, and I was proud of him.
Wow.
Jack, this is Vicki, and that kind of brings me up to a question. You know, of course, everyone that knows rodeo, you know, and loves rodeo was tuned in to the American, and what an awesome production it was, and just, you know, covering all the years that you've been involved and all the contributions you've made to the sport of rodeo, what impact do you feel personally the American will have upon our sport? I mean,
I'll give you my answer. I heard a handful of people criticize it a little bit. Here's what I told them. When we did the national finals, the first year was held in Dallas, people were opposed to having the top 15 compete by themselves. Look what the NFR did. Look what it is today. They did thought out of the box. I thought the American, I was there and watched it. I thought the stock was outstanding. I thought it was a tremendous production. And when a kid 20 years old, I believe, I think his name was Richard Champion, when a 20-year-old kid can win $1 million, what does that do for the sport? And two Brazilians we never heard of before were tremendous. And I watched the young calf roper. I believe he was 18 years old. Qualified and could have won it. When a 70-year-old lady almost made the cut, what does that do for rodeo to me?
Fantastic. Wow.
I wish I was younger and I could try it. I'd do the same thing, and I'd be trying to do it myself. But I thought it was a good shot for rodeo.
Oh, it was amazing.
Hey, gang, since we all know him, I just got a text from D.V. Swaim, A.J. and D.V. Swaim, and Bob Swaim died yesterday.
I know Bob Swaim well. Knew
him. He died yesterday.
Bob did.
Uh-huh, yep.
I'm sorry.
So I just wanted to, because I know all of us knew him and knew that.
I knew Bob well.
Yep. So.
Well, my condolences. He's a great man, a great cowboy.
Yeah, yes, he's great. You know, Jack, I guess the question that I'm curious to ask you too is, you know, and I guess what Donna Lynn just kind of sparked that to my memory, you know, life is crazy. It can be gone in the blink of an eye.
That's correct.
And I know that, you know, you've done a lot for rodeo, and you've done a lot for the ranching community, and you've done a lot for just everything that you've touched, you really tried to do with integrity and forthrightness and just, you know, leaving and setting a standard, I guess you would say. What is your goal? And when you lay your head down at night, or you say, you know what, Lord, I'm coming home one day, what do you want left here for people to remind them of Jack Roddy?
Ooh, that's a toughie. I know on this ranch, I'd like to leave this ranch like I found it, in better shape than when I found it. I'd like to I'd like to know that the sport's in better shape today than when I left it. And I'm just proud of what I did in my life, and proud of the sport, and proud of the cattle industry, and to be part of it. And there were so many great people on and on that made this sport what it is today. I was a small part of it. But to all the people before me and today that helped make this sport, including yourselves, by this radio program, to make people aware of the importance of the cattle industry and the rodeo industry, the economic importance it has. Where are we going to be without meat? When you raise beef, a cowboy's got to take care of it. So it's so important, and people have to understand the importance of the American cowboy.
And I think you're so right. I think you said it right there, Jack, is you know, there's so much more, honestly, to a cowboy than just what they see for the 8 seconds of the event that they've entered at a rodeo. And, you know, also, There is a lot of cowboys today that strictly are just that. They're just cowboys. That's all they do. That's their full-time job. But from back when, in our generation, in your generation, and there's still obviously those that do it today, but there's a bigger picture behind that culture. There's the farmers and the ranchers, the ones that raise the wheat, the ones that raise the cattle. And it's just been such, you know, they've had such pressure on them as of late because we are getting so industrialized. How do you encourage? Because for me, I see it in the high schools. I was watching a show the other day, and I think it's in San Diego. There's a high school down there that actually, for their Future Farmers of America program, they actually have a ranch, a small portion of some property in a ranch set up where those city kids can buy stock to raise in the Future Farmers of America program, where a lot of schools don't have that. What would you tell schools and communities that are so industrialized how to get them those kids to be encouraged to learn about that type of community, the cattle ranching and the farming? What would you tell them?
Well, this is I live in the Bay Area here, and we have a lot of kids come out to the ranch here. We show them, we explain what we do with cattle, and my thing that I've learned a lot, we have the University of California, Berkeley, every year brings a busload of kids out to this ranch. They're from all over the world, from Arabia, from Japan, from all over the world. And they love to come out to this ranch to see the American West. And I remember 2 years ago, I explained about ranching, the importance of ranching and cattle and how we do things. They're amazed at what we do in America, the technology we have, and so forth. And there's a little kid from Uganda. And I explained all about the beef industry, what we do. And after, he said, "Mr. Roddy, I'd like to talk to you because I come to Uganda where our people are starving, and I'd like to learn more about what you do." So the American rancher has got to let the city people come out and understand the importance of what we do, because on our ranch alone, every year we produce 37 tons of beef on our ranch. And when you talk about sports and baseball and everything else, it comes off of cattle and so forth. Drugs, there's 30 drugs that come from beef cattle. So the city people today need to understand the importance of the livestock industry because we feed the world, we feed the nation. Our technology is second to none. We got to educate other countries. I believe in food, not bullets, and we need to educate the rest of the world to help them. That's kind of what I feel.
Well, that's awesome because I think, and okay, give it to Becky. I think you nailed it because it's the way we keep going. And instead of technology being a negative in our community, we need to use a positive so that we can spread that message and get others out there moving in the direction of, hey, this is there's a reason why we do what we do, and it is a life support, and it is a way of life. So, Jack, you know, I appreciate everything that you shared with us tonight, and I'm actually going to turn it over to Aunt Vicki this time. We've got about, I would say 4 minutes left before we have to close out the show. So before, Aunt Vicki, you take it over, I just want to make sure if there's any callers that are out there and you have anything you want to add or ask Jack before we have to close, please just hit 1 and enter the host queue, and you have a couple minutes to come in. Otherwise, I'm going to turn it over to Aunt Vicki.
Thank you, Becky. Jack, before we go into closing, Donna Lynn, I know you probably have something to say in Jack in closing, so please go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to tell you how much we appreciate and just love the fact that we can actually call you our dear, dear friend, Jack. And I love your whole family. I just want to personally say tell Marion hi, give my love to everyone. And Donna, please tell them hi, because you've meant a lot to me in my life. And it was always Jack and Donna and John and Joanne for years. They were just like family to me.
Oh,
and it all, yeah. So anyway, I can't wait to read your book.
Okay.
Jack, this is Vicki, and again, thank you from the bottom of my heart. Growing up around rodeo with Daddy and Uncle Henry, and just knowing you, what an honor and what a legacy you are leaving for future cowboys. We're going to close it out now and say God bless you, Jack. We love you. Thank you, and we're going to have a little cowgirl logic from Crystal Lyons.
While visiting with some friends, they recalled a time when they babysat our boys years ago when they were both little. They had taken our boys to a nice restaurant, and during the process of the evening, Tiger and Cole had to go to the bathroom, so our friends waited for them at their table. Out came the boys running through the restaurant. They were Superman, and they had those paper toilet seat covers around their necks, and the middle flat part was waving in their backs as their cape. All eyes followed our boys back to their table. Years have passed, and my oldest son, who had long desired to serve his country in the military, has graduated West Point and is now with the 82nd Airborne. In these troubled times, much is at stake, and therefore much is being asked of our young men and women. The little boy that just yesterday was pretending he was Superman may soon be called upon to be just that. You know, I don't particularly care whether people are for or against the wars we're involved in. Our military deserves our utmost respect and support. These are our sons and daughters. They are serving the military because they chose to do so, and we should support the sacrifice they give to serve their in whatever capacity that they are called upon. I am proud of our soldiers. Thank God for our young men and women, and thank God for all you mothers and fathers who remember when your little one was running through the house with a towel for a cape, and now your baby is somewhere overseas, hot, tired, lonely, and determined to make a difference in this world, because that's who he is, a defender of freedom. Know this, Mom and Dad, many are praying for the safety of your son. You may waltz back into your memories and see the image of a dirty-faced child, but we look at your sons and daughters, and we really do see Superman. This is Crystal Lyons, Cowgirl Logic.
Grace Rio Silver was founded in 1997. Our goal today remains the same as it was back then, to provide you, our customer, with a quality buckle. Call today and visit with one of our family design experts about your next trophy buckle. From 1 to 100, each is individually made by hand, one at a time. Remember, at Grace Rio, our only limit is your imagination. Grace Rio Silver, Llano, Texas. 800-550-7535. Or you can find us on the web at traceriosilver.com. Proud to be a part of She's Gone Country with Becky.
She's Gone Country with Becky is proud to have as our charity team Western Wishes, making the dreams of seriously ill children and young adults who love the Western way of life to come true. Western Wishes, leaving the legacy of goodwill the cowboy way. Find out more at westernwishes.org.
Building champions through fitness, finances, and faith. At Trinity Wellness, we believe that through practical application of God's Word, your health and your wealth will be transformed. Trinity Wellness offers top-notch training in exercise, nutrition, and supplementation, and provides the tools to help stabilize and improve your bank account. Let Trinity Wellness be your transformation destination to a new outlook on fitness, finances, and your faith. Find us on Facebook or give us a call at 509-217-8016.
Abraham, David, John the Baptist, and Jesus were all seeking a wilderness experience when they would flee to the desert. Join Higher Ascent for a one-day or multi-day wilderness experience where we seek God in the stillness. Visit us at higherascent.com.
Do you ever feel like you're in mentality hell? You have your doctors and or your support systems in place, but you are still in pain. And then, who is your biggest abuser? Could it now be the one staring back at you in the mirror? To be or not to be accountable is really the question when making the journey to get past the pain of misuse. TobeAccountable.com, practical accountability coaching, specializing in mentality rehabilitation and restoration. A proud sponsor of Soul Sister Enterprise.
This is For Radio, a media platform used to elevate voices and empower dreams. And now, Women on the Edge with Becky Ryan.
Hello, everybody. This is Becky Ryan. This is Women on the Edge, and I am here with the awesome Maria DiGiovanni, co-host, producer, extraordinaire. Are you there, Maria?
I am, and we just had an amazing show of She's Gone Country with Becky with an amazing man called Jack Roddy. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to it, wow, what history she is bringing in on her show. So I just wanted to say thank you so much again for that amazing show. And Becky, how are you with Women on the Edge, and why don't you share with the audience what you are all about?
Well, I am here with you, and each time my heart just starts going. I went and I put in riffness stuff, and I wanted to go and talk about that. I want to talk about Women on the Edge, that we're here to elevate voices, empower women, take what's going on out there in the world, bring it to the forefront and say, why hasn't change happened? And there's so much in the news. My background is technology. I like looking at the trends, finding out what people are searching, and we have a full show. And I hope you'll let me lead with some of the stuff with the Malaysian airplane going down. We have a lot of hurting families out there. Data has come in about the poverty levels. We have Hobby Lobby going tomorrow for a huge court case. We have a lot of people hurting out there, and I don't even know where to begin.
Why don't you start with the Malaysia Airlines? And again, I don't have TV, so I'm only getting the bits and pieces that I'm getting either online or, you know, on my phone with the news. And apparently they did find debris. Do they actually have physical debris in their hands?
Well, I would think that after several weeks and many different sightings and many countries going in, they were very hesitant about saying anything unless they had some more concrete evidence. You have a lot of families that are going to be hurt by the news, as much news has been running. Let me see. We're at almost 3 weeks that it being a headline news trending every single day. So it's not just these families that people are wanting to know more about. The world is. And I'm hoping that they did at least find the wreckage and that there could be some closure. But we're still missing a whole bunch of people. We're wondering why the plane did have to go and do a U-turn. We don't know why the communication went down. But I do hope that this can maybe start helping the families their path.
Why don't you give me some details? Okay, so they did find out that the plane signaled distress?
as far as I know, there is no signal for distress. The plane had taken off, and somewhere around 1 in the morning, Malaysian time, it was a midnight flight, there is a signal that sends out every 30 minutes to tell the airports, I don't exactly know, but it goes and says, we're at this elevation, there's a whole bunch of data that gets exchanged so that they know the speed, the altitude, the direction, and they did have that communication, but they didn't get the communication after that. They only got a handshake, and a handshake did not give them all of the data. It had to have been turned off, and they believe, like if you had seen any of the news, they believe that it had to have been manually switched to turn off. They also know that the plane decided through computer changes, a human being had to reroute the plane. They did a U-turn, and it headed, instead of going up from Malaysia, pretty much, if we were to look at a clock, at 1 o'clock it was going to go to China. It decided to turn around, and it basically, if looking at a clock again, and Malaysia's the center, it decided to do a full U-turn and go to 7 o'clock,
okay,
which is abnormal. There's nothing out there, and I don't know if we're going to find out any more information whatsoever if we don't find this black box. So conspiracy theorists are out there. Over the weekend, people were saying that what's really strange is we had a U.S. naval ship at 1 in the morning go and say, we saw a plane go down. They had fishermen, they had oil riggers, so they saw a plane go down close to where the handshake had been last spotted within this radius. And we weren't investigating that area for 24 hours. So a lot of people are going, well, could it have been a missile? Could it have been something else? Why are we looking only at the pilot? Now, we won't know anything. I just would like to stick to the fact is that it did a U-turn. They found it just outside 1,500 miles from Perth, Australia. It's just sad. How many families are crying? Mothers, fathers, we have two Americans and an infant that went down. This was global awareness and devastation they've had on the news, and our hearts go out to them. Where another bit of news is that they ended up coming out with the data on poverty levels. This is not going to be good news. Metro areas throughout the United States, they have about 100 of the top metro areas. The poverty rate is probably going to just increase 9.4% to 22%. Mm-hmm. The suburbs, which usually increase or prosper, they tend not to have transportation, public transportation, but they usually thrive. Here in Atlanta, we're over 122% in our metro suburban areas. The other thing that's trying to go through is some of the suburbs are even double and triple that number and expected to continue to do that all the way to 2020. What can we be doing? I'm going to push this one to the edge. We need to start thinking of things. It's no longer inner city. This is suburbs.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've been watching it for some time. I watched down kind of Newport Beach. You know, it's an interesting phenomena that's happening.
The biggest area growing is childless adults. And Obama's trying to push legislation right now to get a bill passed that could create, I think it was $6 billion additional to simulate this particular area of the population, which is approximately 7.5 million today, that can't afford Obamacare nor their daily existence.
but yet they're working poor. And they don't qualify for any aid because they don't have children. It is expected by 2015 to be 14.5 million that won't be able to afford it. So he wants to go and start some sort of a way to allow these people anywhere from 200 to 600 a month to be given to them. They're working poverty.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do with 14 additional million? It's going to double.
So what
this
do you
is going
think?
To affect all of our kids. I want to throw away the Obamacare. My personal opinion. If you need to go and give $200 to $600 to cover the Obamacare because these people won't be able to get food, how is that helping us? It makes me sick. And that's what Obama is believing they need the money for so that they can cover it, which means that the Obamacare is still failing. And I don't understand. We have billions, and we have a couple billion. Plus, if we ended up doing this, it'll be another $6 billion. And what happens when this money runs out? So in 2020, we now have even more poverty than we ever did? I don't understand. I really feel that a lot of us would like to opt out of Obamacare. I've heard it. I've seen it all throughout Facebook, on Twitter. We have a few people that are on my list, and I'm here for you. I understand you didn't get medical coverage before. I'm happy you've gotten it. What about the people now that are already struggling and now can't?
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? The IRS steps in and says $2,000. And, by the way, that's this year.
Oh, what happened? Say that again.
It's only this year. If you don't pay and you don't sign up for Obamacare, it's $2,000 out of your taxes. However, the following years, within 2 years, everybody's going to be paying. Hence the reason, let's go back to this, the working poor without children, working poor. They are at the poverty line, but they don't have kids, so they don't qualify for more subsidies.
Right, right.
Okay, that's who Obama's trying to take care of, these people. So in 2 years, we're going to be paying for it regardless, and anywhere from what? We can look at the single person who says anywhere between $200 to $600 is needed to go to each one of them so that we can lift the burden of Obamacare. Now, lift the burden of Obamacare, that $200 to $600 means that they still have to pay their deductible in every one of their visits until they meet that deductible.
Yeah, I'm paying.
Wow.
If I do this, I'm paying for something I'm never, ever going to use. So I don't understand why I need it. I'm never, ever, ever going to use it. I can't afford to go to the doctors. It doesn't cover going to the doctors. So why would
I get it? Not until you paid at least $6,000. Not until you at least paid $6,000. And the catch here is we have cancer people out in California that can't go to their hospital. They ended up writing up, this was last week, they ended up calling all of the hospitals that said that Obamacare, it was listed on their site. So they have a lawsuit about that. It was one lie after another. They said if this was a business, they'd already be shut down.
Oh, yeah.
But
there's absolutely no way. I mean, absolutely. What this is going to end up doing is causing so many people to go underground. This is what happened.
Underground.
This is what happened
in more ways than one. Death panels. There are going to be people who are paying out the yin-yang and still don't get their treatment because somebody said you don't qualify.
Yeah, this is just not okay. Something's not okay here. Not
we,
okay.
They had the hundreds of cancer centers we have in the United States, hundreds. We have four that fully accept Obamacare with the caveat, as long as you only use, and if, now I'm guessing here, but it was only, there's a list of like 100 of the top cancer drugs used and most approved on every health insurance out there from what the article had said. Only a few, a handful of the drugs are approved. All the other treatments are out of pocket. So your doctor's covered, but not your medicine.
And
then, not the
again, if you don't take medicine and you really don't believe in this kind of medication and this kind of medical treatment, why would I pay for something that I'm never going to use, ever?
Brings us right to Hobby Lobby. Believe it or not, you have a belief of not using medicine. Hobby Lobby says, I don't want any drugs that could cause an abortion. They don't want to anything related to an abortion. They are to the point that they're saying, listen, our founding religion says no contraceptives. So would the Catholics. So would the Mormons. So would quite a few other religions out there. If you need those, we will hire you. You pay for them out of your own pocket because
right.
We believe it to be a sin because it's nowhere in the Bible. Now, tomorrow, it is a Make It for Religion Freedom, Religious Freedom. Founding Fathers brought this in. We came over here and attacked the poor Indians. But we won't go there, but we'll just say that the Founding Fathers came over here for religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Hobby Lobby tomorrow is going to a case, and I am asking people to be praying for them. I am praying for them because I do believe that if a company says that it's absolutely against their religion, they shouldn't be forced to do something against their religion.
Yeah, why would – yeah, no way. Okay, this is what I don't understand. I don't understand what country I'm living in anymore. It's very confusing.
Tomorrow is going to be huge. It's either going to be we believe in religious freedom or we really have a shakeup and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. So send your prayers out. I am really hoping that we can have the religious freedom. I don't even want to picture what it means if we don't. There is quite a bit of legislation out there trying to go against this. We have the atheists. We have different religions. We have gay rights. We have so many against this, but I'm going, it's one company. They always founded themselves as a Christian company. We have Chick-fil-A. Forever 21 is another one, which maybe some people know or don't know, but the reason why John 14 is at the bottom of all your bags is because it's a very Christian company.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they believe. If you don't believe, when I go to an Indian place and I'm buying a Buddha, I believe that they must believe in Buddha.
Right.
I wouldn't want to be going and signing up to become one of their employees if I was absolutely against it and trying to convert people.
Right.
And I think they should have the right. But I don't think that we should have the right that we have to force other people's beliefs down Hobby Lobby's throat. I do believe in birth control. I have 6 kids. At some point, I had to say no. I'm not saying that it's a sin, but I am saying if they believe it, and you don't, then don't go shopping there. But you shouldn't stop them. They're not.
Right.
They're believing they're aiding the families. They're bettering the communities. They're thriving because people know what their beliefs are and they support it.
Yep.
So with that one, guess what's trending?
Say so.
Fears.
Fears.
Fears, like phobias.
Okay.
Fear of flying, fear of heights, fear of snakes, fear of driving, but fear and how to overcome it. And how? What's the difference between fear, anxiety, and phobia? We've never had that as a trend.
Wow.
But that really surprised me. The fear of flying, I guess that's the Malaysian. Oh, we also had fear of clowns. I thought that was funny. I figured we had a whole bunch of kids.
Clowns are possessed. I don't like clowns. They're possessed. All clowns are possessed. It's crazy.
And I couldn't help but start doing the searches. I really feel that there is a spirit of fear. It's a sneaky one. It's a strong one. It prevents people from doing things. It's imaginary. It makes mm-hmm. us think of things that have yet to come, but are devastating.
It's an illusion.
And I ended up looking into it and it said, fear is imaginary, and it causes someone to freeze until they understand it. Mm-hmm. Then they get the courage, which means to turn the fear into something good and to overlook the fear. Okay. Why are so many people looking at fears? And I thought about it. I have had fears. Do you have any fears?
You know what? I really don't anymore. And it's funny because I don't, simply because when you know that you walk around with a target on your back, you don't fear anything anymore. When you know that anything can happen and you're going to heaven, you really don't fear so much anymore.
Wow. You know? Maria, did you know I was going to talk about this at all?
No.
No. Do you recall what you just said? Because you believe that you're going to be going to heaven?
Yeah, there's no doubt.
What you just said.
No doubt.
Do you know that the only thing that they can guarantee you to get over your fear, especially at the fear of death, was your belief in an afterworld and going regularly studying and communing about God?
Yep. That's why we do Soul Sister Sunday.
What?
You know, that's why we do Soul Sister Sunday. You know, it's
absolutely.
It's the small group time. We're doing a couple reruns last week, this week coming up, and the following week, just to fill her up right now. But it really is. Once you get to that place where you know what's going to happen, it's just a numbers game. Really? Just how many more days?
Well, do you know that 90% of every fear you've ever had never came true? And I found out another one is that fear is just only this uncomfortable feeling that we have when we feel threatened. And we can act a whole bunch of different ways, but it really can come from something real that happened, especially as a kid. Or it was an imagined threat because you feel that it could happen because you have a negative outlook on the future. Mm-hmm. You might be fearing that you're going to lose your job, but currently you have a job.
Exactly. It's kind of like when I was going through the hardest time when, Lauren was in her teens, and I can remember thinking, okay, I could be homeless. No, I'm not homeless today, okay? My car could break, but it's going today. The one thing that fear is false evidence appearing real. And once you really truly understand that it's false evidence appearing real, you understand false evidence appearing real. you can get to a place where you can fear for your mortal flesh, your mortal body. But once you get to that place where you don't fear for your mortal soul, your spirit, then anything that kind of goes on in the physical sense truly is just an illusion. And you can't really tell that to a lot of rape victims. However, being a rape victim, you have to get to that place where you understand that even as a child, if you were involved with child sexual abuse, it really never touched the child of God that you were created to be. And but to get victims from that place of truly understanding that, yes, it touched your mortal body, but you're just fearing. You're fearing an illusion. And yes, it physically happened, but it was an illusion that it did not touch your spirit. It didn't touch the child of God. And that's where the enemy, if we can get people to think at that elevated thought, then that kills the energy of the negative that's out there. Does that make sense?
That was the stuff I was finding. However, at first I found quite a few more pages dealing with the fear, which could have even given me another fear. I'm like, whoa, we don't need to go down that path. But no. Absolutely. And one of the things I thought was really interesting was one of the people had said, you can't master what you don't understand. Fear is invisible. What's visible is one reality. And if you're creating this illusion, you're wasting a whole bunch of time. And I couldn't believe how many people on some of these pages that were talking about their fear and their anxiety and their phobias and the drugs they were taking to get over it. And their answer was, their testimony, is when I finally surrendered the fear and gave it to God, one person said, I was very stubborn. It took decades to let this sink in. But one day I woke up and I said, I'm just going to give it to you, God, and I let it go. And other people are like, well, that seems really easy. How do you really get that to happen? And they go, I can only tell you it was that easy.
Yeah. When you finally realize it's that easy, you just kind of go, wow. Kind of cool.
Yeah, but it was just like, yeah, how many times did you have to say it? No. Now, granted, it took me a couple decades. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know what? The person was really saying that they regretted the decades of something mm-hmm. that they always knew. And they said that they also didn't give God enough time at times. They gave him a time limit to get rid of something. And they,
there's a poem, and I'll find it, and I had written it a long time ago, and it talks about how we give God our broken toys, and then we get mad at him when he doesn't fix them fast enough. And you'll give it back to me, I'll fix it myself. Well, you didn't even give me time to look at it. And that's kind of what we do, because we want to play with that toy or we want to do that, and they're taking too long. You remember? So your kids, something done right now. And, you know, that's how it is. You've got 1 minute, 45 seconds left.
Well, I wanted to kind of go and say, if anybody is battling with fear, I want you guys to go and look at maybe Psalms 56. I'd even like you to remember King Saul when he wrote 1 Samuel 21. He was fighting fear. And at the very end of it, he trusted in the Lord. But he was in fear. He had to wait 10 years to hear from God. But he said, trust in me. Fear not. And this anxiety that might be building up and the fears of death and loved ones, remember, there really is a hereafter. There is a Lord. And pray for Hobby Lobby. We need our religious freedom. We need the ability to be able to voice our love, our concern, our questions, and come together.
I am Becky Ryan. I am Women on the Edge with Maria. And I want you to check in with us. When are we coming back on? Because we have new show times coming up.
We're going to come back on next week because Friday I will be at Saddleback Church at a big mentality conference. So we'll see
you
next week.
We're praying for Maria.
Yeah, 1 week from tonight on Women on the Edge here on 4 Radio. Thank you, Becky, for choosing 4 Radio as your platform.
I want to take a moment to just give a special thank you to our show sponsors, ImageCoach.com, Soul Sister Enterprise, the Law Office of Corrine R. Walson, and to our station sponsors, Heart4.com and 4 International, where we elevate and empower those who are overcoming adversity.